Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat, a weekly series of podcasts about happiness and work culture. Hello again, this is Bruce. This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat. I'm Bruce Daisley. It's episode 45, in fact. Now, this is the second part of an in-depth look into the work of thought leaders. It's all very well looking at academics and people who've done research and investigation, but what about the people who haven't done that? Maybe I've just been unfairly dismissive to people with opinions. So we've just done the episode of Tom Goodwin, and here's Chris Barrows-Brown. Now, Chris Barrows-Brown is a best-selling author. I think he was Penguin's best-selling business author in 2014, and he's a culture consultant. He set up a business called Upping Your Elvis, which their website says is Creative Leadership Capability Company. We train businesses to manage change by giving people creativity, energy, and flexibility. As Chris describes, they provide sort of immersive experiences to improve the culture of leadership teams. Now, these things don't come cheaply. One company told me they'd spent over £1 million using Upping Your Elvis. So it's obviously sort of highly demanded, highly coveted, highly priced stuff. Now, the best part, I think, of the chat was Chris talked about something called Talk It Out, which I found really interesting. That's a sort of effectively the power of walking meetings. And in fact, I held this interview back because I was going to do a whole episode about the power of walking meetings. There's a scientist called Marilia Prezzo who's done a paper on it, which is fascinating, just showing really how going for a walk with someone as a meeting can actually liberate a different part of your mind and your problem solving. So it's really interesting that he goes into that. Chris has written a few books. I read in advance of this, I read his book Shine, and I read his book Wake Up. And we talk about both of those at quite a lot of length. So time for the thought leaders. Here's Chris.
I've spent over 10 years helping the biggest companies in the world get better at innovation. If you looked at the most success that we had, when you asked those people, you said, what is it that made the difference? They never said, well, I've got, you know, better process and structures. They always said, well, I know a bit more about myself, how I should show up, why I can't have ideas with that person. So it was always about the human insight and the behavioral approach. So what I wanted to do was get a business that helped people get better at that. So Upping Your Elvis was born, and the name was inspired by Bono. So when he was doing his Third World Debt campaign, he used to go into organizations and he wanted to work out who to play with really quickly. So he used to ask a question that I love, which was, who's Elvis around here? Now, every time you ask that, people can answer it, because what you're really asking is, who here is a bit of a brand, a maverick, they get stuff done, they break the rules, they're more creative, and they love doing it. And I personally believe business needs Elvis more now than ever. And we've all got a bit of it in us. If we know how to bring it out more, we have more fun and we do better work.
Right, got it. When I read that in your book, that goes to show the mistake I made. When I read that in your book, I took that to mean he was saying, looking in the mirror, who's Elvis around here? Meaning him. He was seeking out the Elvis inside him. I guess the end outcome's the same. We're trying to channel Elvis.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, the more we can do that, I think the more that we bring our own unique talents to bear, and therefore the better the work we do.
And look, you know, in advance today, I read a couple of your books. I read Shine and I read the latest one. And the interesting thing for me, Shine very much felt like it was trying to take the energy of, I could almost see that this was a session that you might run. It was like, it felt like a shot of caffeine.
Yeah.
And I guess the flip side of that, you might say, is it didn't feel evidenced. You know, it felt like it was sort of an emotional journey. Can you talk me through how, like, your sessions go when you work with companies?
It's a really interesting insight, actually, because I wrote Shine and it went very well. And then I went back to Penguin and said, I've got another book. And they said, could you possibly do some research on this one? So you're absolutely right. So Shine was purely through my own experience. So working with great companies around the world, we learn as we do. And that's my favourite way of learning. So I'm not much into theories or academia. I'm much more about doing stuff in practice. And all our workshops are based on that. So we would basically, we would set up a principle, some type of thing for somebody to try. They would go and do it. We come back and say, so what? What did you learn? And therefore, Shine is just packed full of things that we've learned over the years, of things that we think add good value to anybody in any type of work.
For me, going through it, there were bits that were like, you're wonderful, you're amazing, you're marvellous. And it felt a bit insubstantial. I would just wonder, you know, how you give substance to those things. The challenge, let's go back to your job at Bass Breweries.
Yeah.
Someone's at Bass Breweries, been there 20 years. Someone turns up and says, you're amazing. Talk me through how that transformation process actually works.
Telling people they're amazing doesn't make much difference,
right,
truth be told. So I think it's good to be reminded about it, but people have to have some type of visceral experience to go, actually, I am pretty amazing. I've got a lot of good stuff going on. And therefore, in the books, yes, they are positive, because we know positive psychology is very useful for people. If you've got a negative bias, you will always see why things don't work. So yes, we accentuate that. But the important thing is people make sense of it themselves. I got a story maybe that could illustrate that. So I was working with Unilever a couple of years ago. I run workshops in my house down in Lyme Regis, and we had a 5-day retreat. And it was for some of the research guys who do all their insight. And on the first day, there was a lady there, Stacey, who'd come in, who was very professional, slightly prickly, you know, had a lot going on in her life, and therefore was quite stressed. And on the last day, we get them to sort of say where their journey has got them to and what their learning is going to be and what they're going to do differently as a result. And she told this story. She said when she joined Unilever 12 years before as a graduate trainee, she was all optimistic and shiny and bright and passionate about what she could do. And they did one of these insight immersions where you go off in an air-conditioned bus and you go and see how people use Unilever products. Now, in her case, she's from Durban, so she went to a township and she saw how people with a lot less resource, you know, cooked and cleaned and lived their lives. And obviously, it's quite an emotive experience, and you know, she was quite moved by seeing this. And on the way back to the bus with all these VPs and presidents, she heard this noise coming from a disused tyre by the side of the road. So she went to investigate, and within it, she found 3 abandoned puppies. Now, she knew she couldn't save them all, but she did decide she could save one. So she picked it up and took it on the bus, at which point everyone just ridiculed her pretty much. They were like, oh, Stacey, you know, you have to firm up. You've got to be more professional. You can't just go with your emotions like this. You will not get along. Anyway, she sat in my house and she'd realised that she'd done exactly that. She spent 12 years becoming the person that she thought they wanted her to be. And therefore, in her terms, she had stopped picking up puppies. Now, I think that's what happens to all of us at work. We tend to socialise the norms, we emulate the leaders so that we can fit in, and that's kind of how we learn and grow. But by doing so, we often lose touch with what it is about us that is special and unique and fabulous. And by that happening, we don't shine as brightly as we could. We don't self-express, we don't take as much risk, we don't bring as much passion to play. Ability.
Okay, that's a great story of her, because like I chatted to a couple of people who have used Upping Your Elvis, and like they said, you know, some of them spoke very highly of it, but said like it's phenomenally expensive, and you know, it's very difficult, big investment for, I think you mentioned sort of, you know, 7-figure something, like big investments for companies. I'm trying to think, if anyone listening to this today, what could they use to try and change? Is it about attitude? Would you frame it as about attitude and energy?
Well, there's very much a big component that's about attitude and energy, very much so. So what we tend to do is we teach people some very simple things they can do differently every day that will, you know, change things up a bit. And it might be simple stuff about how they get the energy right for any interaction. So It's amazing how many people turn up to meetings. They've got no idea why they're there, how they should be, what the vision success is, who the people are in the room with them, what their human connection with those people is. It's simple stuff like that that can make a difference in everything that they do. So we give them tangible, practical things they can do differently. But naturally, people won't implement those unless they see a benefit and unless they make sense of it for themselves and their lives. So a lot of the benefit that people will talk about after doing Up in Your Elvis is that they believe in themselves more. They have a clearer view of who they are, what makes them special, how they can amplify that every day. And a lot of people say, yes, the tools and the techniques and these approaches are very useful, but the most important thing is actually that they love being themselves and they love the opportunity they've got to sprinkle a bit more magic on the stuff they do every day.
So as I've gone through this, and you know, I've interviewed scores of people now, and broadly, the discussions I've had tend to fall into science or snake oil to some extent. Give me the stump speech. Tell me, like, the proven evidence how this works.
Well, what we do, so, you know, because I've come from an innovation background, I've spent decades measuring innovation, and I've decided it just doesn't work. There's no good measures for innovation. So the way that we do things is we just collect great stories. That's what we do. So it's very important when we're doing a change program to get some evidence of success really early on and actually attach an ROI to it. So we will make sure we get one of those early on. And usually what happens then is the board will go, fine, I've seen the success, and therefore I can relax because I know it's working. And actually then a lot of the personal stuff can carry on. So a Unilever example, you know, we knew from the work that we did early on that they saved almost £500,000 worth of agency fees because they started to run stuff they wouldn't usually run themselves. And therefore, we said there's an ROI. And therefore, actually, a lot of the leadership change can then come through. When we worked with ITV, they were putting Coronation Street out for pitch for sponsorship, expecting to get a lot less than before because viewers were going down. And using our approaches, they got, you know, a record deal. We got an ROI, so now we can carry on. So that's our approach, because I think you can spend a lot of time measuring things that aren't that important. We do naturally plug into measures that are already there. So, you know, a lot of companies will have an audit around people's engagement, you know, how well developed they're going to be. We'll tap into those. But actually, usually we can get some evidence of our own that's a lot more exciting, quite frankly.
Give me your take on the connected world. How can all these things help us deal with a world where there's relentless emails and more demands on us?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an extraordinary time, isn't it? I mean, we are 24/7. We are connected. Our attention is demanded. And for a lot of people, it's a bit too much. And learning how to deal with that is important. Now, I would never say we turn back time, because obviously the opportunities that we can have from that connected world are extraordinary. But as it's developed, we haven't really learnt how to manage that well so that it just adds value to our lives rather than actually becomes a bit onerous. Mm. So I think a lot of the stuff in Wake Up, for example, is about learning how to step back from that a little bit, how to create space so that actually we can be a bit more aware of who we are and what's going on. There's a lot of research that is suggesting that the temptation to multitask, which we obviously do when we're fully connected, has quite an impact on the way that we process. So we're becoming shallower, frankly. And actually, what you really need to do to be really creative and to create as much value as you can in your life is to have times when you are much deeper with your focus. So a lot of Wake Up is about saying, actually, how do you step back from that and be more aware? So one of the analogies we use there is we've all had the experience of driving a long distance in a car, and we get to the destination and we can't remember large chunks of the journey. And that happens basically because our brain is trying to save energy. So our conscious brain is like a gas-guzzling V8. It uses loads of energy. And we all know that because if we've ever learnt a new instrument or a language, we tire quite quickly. So what our brain does really smartly is it tries to save energy by switching to subconscious. And the way the subconscious works is it looks at our situation today and says, where have I seen something like that before? If it looks familiar, I'm going to assume it's exactly the same. So therefore, I can depower the conscious brain and work off habit. Now, in doing so, you save lots of energy. It's more like a Tesla, the way that it runs. But it means that we spend large chunks of our life on autopilot. And actually, the connected world almost necessitates that, because we have so much information to deal with. We just react to things really subconsciously. And I think to really live a great life, we need to be able to step back from that. So the latest research is suggesting we spend almost 80% of our life on autopilot. So wake up is all about using very simple things, maybe once or twice or three times a day, so that actually you step back and you can ask yourself, well, what am I doing right now? You know, am I using my talents? Am I using my attention to do stuff that creates the most value, rather than just being swept away on busyness?
So should we talk through a couple of the examples?
Yeah, of course.
Wake up. So wake
happy
up.
To.
Not only a book, it's an app as well.
It is an app, yeah.
And it seems like it's, I mean, it's one of those books that invites you to scribble in. It invites you to participate, to actively make changes to what you're doing, and so the app's the same theme. Do you want to give us some ideas and how you came up with the ideas in it?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, there's lots of very simple activities in there. Some are more physical. They might be about nutrition or exercise. Some might be a bit more mental, about how you focus your attention and how you clear yourself from the busyness. Some might be a bit more emotive, and it's all about helping you tap into those emotions and use them well. Some might be about connectivity and about how well connected you are to the people who are important in your life. So basically, I generated lots of them. I've been experimenting with this stuff for a long time, so I know what works for me. I asked all the people I thought who were great at actually making sure they had good energy, in the work that they do. And as time goes on, we're starting to get other people suggesting them. So the great thing about the app is that what you do there is you try some things out, you rate it so that it can learn what works for you. And you can actually add exercises that you find are exciting. And then other people can copy yours. So actually, it's user-generated stuff. So I'm hoping there'll be thousands of different things. And the beauty of this stuff is that what works for one person might not work for another. So it's all about experimenting and seeing, you know, how you get benefit. So we worked with Psychology's magazine for 12 months, getting a load of their readers and bloggers to try these things out to see what worked for them. So that, you know, it wasn't just theory, we actually had some practical experiences going on. And it was fascinating. You know, people got amazing benefits from things I was quite surprised by, and vice versa. I thought some things were a shoo-in for, you know, big change, no impact at all. And that's the nature of it. But what we did find that the people that experimented with it over that 12-month period, especially the bloggers, a lot of them had challenges with all sorts of things, you know, a lot of mental health issues, which a lot of us suffer from, anxiety, you know, even depression, self-esteem issues, and they all improved quite dramatically by trying these things out. So I see it as just a massive experiment. If you go in with good energy, you give it a go, some will win, some will not, but you will get benefit over time. We used a very simple technique that we teach a lot of our clients, which we use actually for brainstorming, which is called talk it out, where you go off in a pair, one of you rants about your brief, the other one just listens. And over the years, we've noticed that people come back with great insight and often great ideas off the back of it. But nearly everyone comes back and say, I feel better. So we just did a little freebie gig where we got a load of people together in London, a load of people together in Lyme, and we just said, why don't you just talk about your life and just see if it helps? And the number of people that showed up who went, this isn't going to help. You know, I'm here, I'll give it a go, but I can't imagine it's going to have a benefit. Half an hour later, they came back going, wow, revelation. I'm so much clearer on where I was at. And those people, because they had that cynicism at the beginning, they've just got this little superpower. So I personally, I quite like working with those types of people. Simple insight is we don't often get to talk about our lives without being edited. So we often speak in sound bites, you know, here's my bit, there's your bit. And therefore you don't get much processing. Now, if you walk and you talk, we all process kinesthetically. So the walking helps free things up. No one's looking at you. You're walking side by side. So you don't feel like you need to edit yourself too much. And we give them 7.5 minutes just to go flat out. Now, over 7.5 minutes, what tends to happen is you run out of your normal story that's kind of in your conscious brain, which is your story about what's going on in your life. And actually, if you just keep talking, other stuff bubbles up. Some of the stuff you might not be at all aware of.
Right, so let's be really clear. So they're going for a 7.5 minute walk.
Yeah.
And one person is talking.
One person,
and
flat out.
The other person's listening.
Absolutely.
Got it.
The other person does not interrupt, otherwise you end up having a conversation. That's not what we want. So if you go for 7.5 minutes, eventually you get a little bit bored maybe of what you're saying, or you know, you run out of story. And if you just keep talking, every now and again you will say something. And actually, as you say it, you have a bit of a reaction. You feel something physically. And often that's our subconscious saying, hey, pay attention. There's something going on here that maybe you hadn't thought of before. And often what people feel when they come back is they just get a lot more clarity about things that they haven't been paying attention to, things that were bothering them that they weren't so aware of, stuff that actually, if they got more of in their life, they'd be super excited by. And just in doing that, they come back obviously with a bit more energy and a bit more focus of what they want to do differently into the future.
That's interesting, because one of the ones I was trying at the weekend was your lung exercise, your breathing exercise, where right. you said, you know, we don't use the bottom third of our lungs. And it almost, you're saying the same there, aren't you? You're saying by going 7.5 minutes into what we would normally finish in three, yeah. we're going into the bottom half of our consciousness to some extent. We're reaching into places we don't normally reach.
Absolutely. So nobody knows exactly how much of our brain is conscious versus subconscious, but you know, the latest research is suggesting it's somewhere between 5 and maybe 15% of our brain is conscious. Therefore, actually, there's so much stuff that we're not really aware of that is key to the way that we react to the world, the way that we show up with our energy, the way that we process. And therefore, if we can start to tap more of our subconscious, number one, we'll have much better ideas, much more creative ideas, because obviously there's more processing going on there. But also, we'll start to get more of an understanding of what's important. So if you can learn how to access that in a more everyday human approach, which is what Talk It Out does, I think it's great therapy, and we feel good about it, but we can also come up with much better ideas. So one of the most important parts of a healthy work culture is that people take responsibility for their own learning and growth. So I used to do a lot of work years ago with Dan Walker, who was head of talent at Apple, and he was a fascinating character. He was one of the first people I know who banned appraisals, annual appraisals. And now people are catching on. Accenture have done it. A lot of people are realizing that sitting down once a year and going, how have I done, is not the most useful way of making sure that people grow to their full potential. So what he used to do is he used to go around Apple and he used to ask how people are doing. And if people couldn't say, he'd run to their boss and shout at them because he thought it was the boss's fault. Now, I don't think it's the boss's fault. I think it's your fault. If you don't know how you're doing, it's because you're not asking the right questions. So one of the most impactful things we do in any culture is we teach people how to demand feedback every day. If you're having a meeting, if you're having an interaction, you know, if it's an hour in your diary, you stop at 45 minutes to say, well, okay, tell me, what did I do that was brilliant? And what could I do even better next time? And you capture that information down and you start to see themes coming out. Now, by doing so, when it does come to, you know, your appraisals, it's very easy then to say, well, look, I seem to be very good at this, but this is where I need some help. And because you demanded the feedback yourself, you get the context, you own it, you make sense of it. And therefore, I think you'll have much greater chance to actually learn and grow. So a big part of a creative culture for me is one that experiments constantly. And actually, with the way that business is now, if you're not experimenting, you're going to be dead quite quickly. Now, experiments are very expensive if you're not good at learning. So teaching people how to do that and own it themselves, I think, is hugely powerful. So one thing that we've got people doing recently is when you wake up in the morning, I mean, so many people, the first thing they do is reach their email. And actually, they are then busy until they're back in bed. So one simple thing to do is go outside for the first 10 minutes of every day, sit quietly, nothing digital anywhere near you, and just reconnect with who you are, what's going on, what important thing you need to achieve that day. I'm a huge believer, if you know at the start of every morning what the big thing is you need to achieve and you don't do anything until it's done, we get much better work.
Right, so talk me through this. Am I allowed the radio on before I do it?
I would personally just go out absolutely clean. So, right. So your brain is not congested, it's not full of stimulus. Because actually the temptation for us a lot of the time is just to get more candy and keep filling, you know, it, because it gives us a wonderful dopamine hit each time.
I suspect this might work better when you've got a nice house in Lyme Regis
than it has advantages. It does have advantages. But a lot of folk who do it in town, you know, they might just look out of a window. If you can connect with nature, it does help. But it's the peace and the space. Because right. generally, we don't have much reflection time in life. And actually, that reflection time is super valuable. Being busy is, it's such a drug for us. We just love it and we get caught in it. And it feels like we're being amazingly productive, but often we're not, because often we're actually spending our time doing the wrong stuff. So if it just takes 10 minutes at the start of a day to make sure you do at least one of the right things and you do it brilliantly, I think it pays off.
Where'd you keep your phone then?
My phone would not come out with... I don't have a phone anywhere near a bedroom. It's in an office, locked away in a little cupboard.
Phones are locked away from you?
Well, when I'm doing that stuff, definitely, yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'm also a massive believer in not doing email as you go through the day. I'm a big believer in zoning stuff. So, you know, there's a time in your diary where you do email and the rest of the time it's off.
Yeah, I mean, look, I do understand there are certain jobs where you can do that, but I just think... The reality for a lot of people is that it proves incredibly difficult.
Yeah, well, it is. And actually, we get caught in a culture where it's expected, unless you manage it very deliberately yourself. I was reading some ridiculous stat of something like 70% of email is responded to within a minute. I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? That means you're just sitting there waiting for stuff to come to you. Now,
but it does raise an expectation, you see, because then consequently, when you're in an environment where people do respond like that, when someone doesn't reply for 3 hours, you start depending on that person less.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose the question is, you know, how do you add value? If you're responding that quickly, I would say basically you're an administrator. That's what you're doing. You are just responding to stuff that comes to you.
I think that's superficial because that's a bit like saying in conversation, you know, I think in truth, what it is, it's an evolution of the way that email works. For me, evolution is discursive and rapid fire. So it's like lines in a conversation rather than, you know, if I get an email that's 2 pages long, it takes me 2 days to reply to that. If I get an email that's 1 line long, then I'll reply with 1 line instantly. So it just depends. For me, it's an evolved form of conversation in some ways when I'm using email like that.
But I can understand that. I mean, I think, you know, there is a time when bouncing off stuff quickly can be very useful for us. I also would suggest that there are times that actually doing that shallow type of processing isn't useful for us, because actually what you tend to do is quite iterative work and it tends to be quite incremental in its thinking. So there are times we want to think bigger. There are times we want to step back from stuff and actually say, okay, now what could be? If I was really to dream right now, what could I produce as far as this piece of work is concerned? And I don't think that suits itself to doing quick fire emails. So a lot of my suggestions here would be saying, be aware and actually choose what's needed here. The best creative leaders I know are brilliant at actually being able to answer that question. And there are times that iteration's good, and there are times that big think is good. And you have to set up very different kind of energetic contracts, behavioral contracts, depending on those two questions.
And so what's the question? What's needed here?
What's needed here? What's needed here? Because I can guarantee what's needed here is not what was needed yesterday. You know, things have changed. What's needed here, you know, I suppose what you're asking here is, what do I need to do to get myself in the right place for the work that I'm doing? Number two, what do I need to do with the other people that I'm working with? And number 3, what's the context of the work? Because actually, if it's about just playing with an agenda for a meeting tomorrow, we do it really fast on an email, that's absolutely fine. If it's about coming up with some new platforms for a big innovation, best not do that on email. Best create some proper space to invest some time in thinking in something creative.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So a story of something we've done quite recently. So we're working with the top 65 people in an organization, a very big FMCG, one of the biggest on the planet. And 65 people, they wanted to come up with some ideas on the future of their business. And ordinarily, if you were to take the big insights and the big trends of what's going on and think about those things creatively, you'd be there for weeks. So we did some of these human approaches. And actually, we did a talk it out with them. We got them to go outside and do something incredibly human. And what was fascinating about it was that when they came back, they had a very different energy. They were way more excited about the possibility in the future. They practically came up with over 100 ideas. They implemented over 20, one of which made 35 million quid. And I can guarantee if we'd have used traditional approaches, we'd still be there today. So I am a huge fan of trying to make creativity and leadership human, energetic, playful and fun, because actually everyone's gagging for it. And as long as we can show people that there's a benefit to it and there's an ROI and we're not doing this just for the fun of it, it's not all about beanbags and pixie dust and fairy lights, which is the old way, I think, of thinking about it, then, you know, it can only make business better.
Thank you to Chris Barris Brown. Like I say, I really enjoyed his book, Wake Up. And that's just lots and lots of ways to inspire yourself and think of different ideas. Consider it like a workbook, something to scribble in. You can always connect to me on LinkedIn and you can follow us on Twitter. For example, I tweeted out, I wrote a piece about laughter for the BBC this week. I tweeted that out. So you can follow us on Twitter by searching eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. See you next time.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.